podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Another intriguing day's play at Rawalpindi, Pindi, which has left the match situation with Pakistan requiring another 263 runs to win. They're 80 for two in their second innings. But Azhar Ali had an injured finger as well. So you could say potentially they're two and a half down, I suppose, wickets-wise. And how many overs left? Probably 75, maybe 80. Simon Mann, you can be better place to assess what prospects England have of getting a full day's playing tomorrow, given sort of mist in the morning and darkness in the evening. How do you see the match situation?
Well, I think we'll get the same amount of play as we've had on the previous 4 days. I suppose it just depends whether England want to bowl more overs. It's up to them to get the over rate moving, isn't it? If you want to bowl the 90 overs available in the day, I think they'll struggle to get 90 overs in the day. You're looking at probably something in the region of 80 overs. So another 263 in 80 overs. What's that? It's about 3.5 runs per over, which is not particularly difficult on this surface, and it's not easy to get batters out if they're not playing extravagant shots. So I think all four results are possible going into this final day, and I don't see England as clear favourites. I think Pakistan have got a definite chance in this match, the way Imam and Shakil batted this evening. It does mean it's going to be a really interesting last day. I mean, there's quite a lot of pessimism here among the talk about some of the Pakistani fraternity. Our team's not really good. England have played all the cricket in this game, and they sort of have in a way. Although Pakistan have really, Pakistan really dug in their first innings. They scored 579, albeit in a slightly different way. So anyway, brilliant last day. No one knows what's going to happen, do they? I mean, we think we can make our predictions. We've got our hunches. No one knows what's going to happen. But I do think Pakistan are in this game. I really do.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, well done to both sides for their enterprise generally. England obviously setting the tone with that breathtaking breakneck first innings, and then Pakistan following up with an excellent performance of their own, as you say, to get 579. So honours almost even in that first innings, but England have created that extra time that enables a possibility of a positive result. So do you think Pakistan can chase 342? Well, I just think there are two things are not in their favour. One is obviously the injury to Azhar Ali and the fact that Babar Azam is also back in the pavilion. But also, yeah, I just feel they're very weak lower down the order, especially from eight onwards. They are basically four number 11s. So I think England have a massive chance if they can get those first six wickets, and they've got two already. So really, they only need to take another four wickets, and one of those will be Azhar Ali, who is maybe not fully fit. So actually, you could look at it, we only need three wickets. And I think the way England are approaching it as well, just the way they've bowled, the field set, the way they have, it's just challenging Pakistan and taking the game to a different dimension, a different dynamic, really, which probably a lot of Pakistan batsmen haven't been used to. I just think England's imagination has been fantastic. And in a way, they deserve to win because they've been so enterprising.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think they have made the running in this game, and they've played the exciting cricket in Pakistan in their first innings. They played traditional cricket, really. Although, you're under a lot of pressure, aren't you? When an opposition goes out and smashes 657 in 100 overs, there's a danger you're going to wilt. But Pakistan didn't do that. They're used to these sorts of pitches. They're used to these conditions. They're used to facing big scores, actually. It's part of the game here. And so they made England work damn hard for those 10 wickets. Even this morning, they made them work hard. They scored another 80 runs for the last three wickets. England didn't get frustrated, but there were passages where you thought, how are they going to get them? It just looked hard to dislodge players who did not want to get out. And Mahmood, the leg spinner, really dug in. He's not a great player, but he showed the sort of attitude that you need to survive on this pitch if you're sort of battling for a draw. And it might well be, we say they've got four number 11s. It might well be, the tail is not absolutely useless. So if Pakistan can get close-ish, you know, a bit of support from the tail with a batter further up the order, then you know, Pakistan, you know, could still get over the line. What I don't see, I think, is England winning this game by, you know, 130 runs or anything like that. I feel, you know, if England are going to win this game, it feels as though it might be quite tight. And, you know, and based on squeezing that lower order, you know, who do wilt under the pressure. What I noticed was the relative ease with which Shaquille and Imam survived until the close. And Imam's, you know, he's got 300s on this ground, his last three innings. You feel, well, he's due a failure then. But he looks nice and confident. Shaquille looked pretty secure, and actually looked secure in the first innings until he played a slightly out-of-character wafty shot outside the off stump. But there is the pressure, isn't there, Yoz, I mean, of chasing on the final day or trying to win on the final day. And you have been under the pump for most of the game. England have dominated the game, as you say. I mean, you clearly think that England are in, you know, sort of the big box seat going into the final day.
I mean, obviously they haven't got a Nathan Lyon or I don't know, an Anil Kumble or, you know, even a Ravi Jadeja, really, who can, or a Ravi Ashwin, who can really exploit a fifth day pitch. There's nothing much in the pitch anyway, so it is going to be hard work. It's not just a case of thinking there's six unplayable, eight unplayable deliveries out there. There definitely aren't. But I just think the way England are approaching it, they're trying to conjure wickets in much more imaginative ways than I've seen England players in the past. They haven't really got the frontline bowlers necessarily to back that up, well, certainly in the spin department, but they are trying their best. And I loved the way today that Stokes set very close fielders to Jack Leach and said to Shaquille, go on, they need it over the top. With almost a schoolboy field, very close in, sort of on the square, as it were. Nobody pushed back, and the batsman took the option of hitting it over the top. In a way, I can see Stokes' sort of mentality is, oh, have a go then, and if it doesn't come off for England, well, it will in a bit. You know, he's got that kind of positive, confident, almost not invincible mentality, but he's so convinced that things will work that they try, and it's sort of contagious. And one example was the ploy they tried tonight with the ball, and it was bouncer tactics. So they've given up the idea, which I was almost calling for in the first innings. They'd given up the idea of bowling with a slip and a gully and trying to swing it and make it seam even with a brand new ball. No, just go straight to short pitch bowling, barely a slip in sight, and men on the boundary. And although it's a pitch where you have to absolutely flog your guts out to get anything out of it, and to get it up high, it still arrives at different heights and different paces, and different batsmen have different ways of approaching that sort of attack as well. Some will duck, some will weave, some will go for the hook. It's not a very easy pitch to duck on because the ball doesn't get up very high, so you almost have to stand up and play it or play the pull shot. And that is, it has its element of risk, as we saw with Abdullah Shafiq, who got out pulling and caught in the deep. Yep. And also Babar Azam, who tried to stand up and play it and got a bottom edge and caught behind. Good catch. So it does show that that method of attack, even on a very slow, dead pitch, can have results. It does mean the batsmen have to make decisions. Should I hook? Should I duck? Should I weave? Should I fend it off? And you don't have much time to decide. Of course, it's resonant of those great West Indies sides of the 1980s. You had four men who could all do that type of bowling, and it ball coming at different heights at different paces with very little scoring option, it does make it pretty tough.
Yeah, and it was a tactic that worked, as you said. The two wickets that fell, they basically said it did what we tried in the first innings doesn't really work here, bowling that off top of off stump line. Apparently Joe Root was involved in the suggestion with the coaching staff, and Paul Collins would say that afterwards, and they went for it, and they went for it, I think, after the first ball of the innings. And it was really interesting. They bowled the first ball, Robinson, and then everyone went back and thought, what's happening here? This is a strange tactic. But yeah, I think the way England approached this match has been really commendable. Attacking, aggressive, lots of different options, and that option today it's different, but you can totally understand why they went for it, and you've just explained there how it can work. Coming off at different heights. The only thing I would say is, if you are going to do that, and batters are sometimes going to duck, sometimes take it on. I wonder whether you just need a few more runs. And England could have scored a few more runs. They could have delayed the declaration by another 20 minutes, scored another 20 or 30. I don't know. What I feel is because England really attacked this evening, they leaked runs. They went at four runs and over. Well, if Pakistan score at four runs and over, they'll win well inside the distance tomorrow as long as they keep their wickets intact. So if you are going to be ultra-aggressive, ultra-attacking, do you just need a few more runs in the bank to play with and just make that target a little bit harder? I mean, England will say, well, we've come to entertain. And that's what Paul Collingwood said afterwards. And Brendan McCullum said, if we're going to risk losing to win the game. It just feels, I don't know, I think when you've watched a lot of Test cricket, which we both have over the years, we've watched years and years of it. And it does take a bit of getting used to, doesn't it? This idea that you dominate a game, you score so quickly, score 650, and then you give the opposition the chance to win. And I can sort of see why you would do it on this pitch, because you've got to get the opposition sort of open-minded to playing a few shots, because it's not easy to get them out. You won't just bowl them out. If Pakistan wanted to block for a draw, I think they could have done it. So you've got to get them playing some shots. But if you're going to bowl this short pitch tactic, then if you just have a few more runs in the bank, then you've just got a bit more latitude to do that for a bit longer. And also, you can attack with the spinners as well. You can have the field up. Go on, hit me over the top, like you just mentioned with Jack Leach. Anyway, so to me, it would seem a shame if England lost this game because of the way they played. You say, Pakistan will have to play well. It would seem a shame to lose when you've dominated the game and played all the cricket and showed all the, tactical ingenuity.
Yeah, I think that you can look at it that way. I would look at it another way, and I think it's the way that Stokes and McCullum look at it, and that is, this is a gesture to Test cricket as a whole. Yeah. It's not just about winning one game or even winning one series. It's about a message. It's about a philosophy. It's about a brand of the game, which has been at times criticised for negative play, for bad light going off the field, for perhaps time preparing pitches which are too suitable to the home side, all sorts of things, for the World Test Championship, which is extremely confusing, and therefore maybe put some people off the knockout tournaments, whether it's the T20 or the 50 over cricket tournaments, are more easy to understand in a way than the World Test Championship. And people haven't got the time to devote to watching a Test match or following the path of a Test series, etc. So I think what they're trying to do here, and this is what Stokes has done with his own career in a way as well, by absolutely earmarking Test cricket as his big focus and encouraging other players to do the same. And I heard Jos Buttler saying exactly that in the Sky studio the other day, that, Stokes has put his, thrown all his kind of lot in with Test cricket, and that is a very infectious and influential thing to do, and it's persuading other players to do the same. So it's transmitting a message that we can make Test cricket entertaining. You used that word, they used that word, and that's really important. And look at the response from the Pakistanis today. I mean, that was a tell me if I'm wrong, but that looked a big crowd today at Rawalpindi. And, there people talk about Test cricket dying and crowds being poor and so on. Well, that's not the evidence of this series so far, though early days. And that's partly due to England's enterprising approach.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I wonder whether it's also to do with big crowds in Rawalpindi. They have been good. Is whether it's to do with the fact there hasn't been Test cricket or much Test cricket in Pakistan for 17 years, and England are coming back to play here. We'll see what the crowds are like in Multan and Karachi. So I think that's to me, that seems like a stronger element. And Pakistan have got some star players that they like to come out and watch, like Babar Azam. And actually, when Babar Azam was out this evening, a few people went home. Not everybody, but a few people went home. So I think that there's the factor as well. But I definitely agree that the way England are playing Test cricket is utterly beguiling. And there was a fascinating summer last summer. But you can still play entertaining cricket. And England have in this game. They've made all the running. They really have. But it doesn't mean to say that you then just say, OK, well, I don't know, make it slightly easier for the opposition to win. I suppose it's just it's so much ingrained in us that that international sport is about winning. It is about entertaining, and I agree. But you can entertain and win, and it just to me the declaration just felt a little bit too generous. That was my own feeling. And okay, if England win tomorrow, fine, okay, I'll say I'm wrong. But if Pakistan win tomorrow, they'll say, well, you know, we risked losing to win. You know, it's just the way we play.
Well, that's okay. I think that's a good message to transmit. We risked losing to win.
But they played in an entertaining way already. They've played, cricket. But why just give the game away?
But the whole point of playing entertaining cricket is A, to get people interested, and B, to create a result at the end of the game. And, you know, in a way, all right, if you lose, then it's upsetting, but it's not the end of the world. There are two tests to go. They can carry on playing this way. And I think the more often they play this way, the more often they will win, as was shown in the summer. And one other thing just to say about the declaration, I don't necessarily think they were planning on 342 at tee. They were probably looking for 350, 360 by just after tee, but they looked at it and Will Jacks had just got out. And so had Harry Brooke, and now they were left with Liam Livingstone and the tail enders. Well, Liam Livingstone was hobbling around on one leg and probably would have done himself no good staying out there longer. And then the three tail enders, which would have wasted potentially quite a bit of time getting the necessary runs they wanted, could have cost another 20 minutes, say, which is another, what, 5 or 6 overs, which might be the difference between winning and losing, being able to have the time to bowl Pakistan out on the final day and not. So I think it was a sort of, it was a rational, practical decision rather than the ideal time. It was like, let's look at this. Also, you don't lose time during the tee interval for the 10 minutes change of innings as well. So it was sort of saving potentially about half an hour, which I suppose you could say was giving the Pakistanis a bit more opportunity to win, but hopefully England a bit more opportunity to win as well.
Yeah, so you think actually they wanted more, but they couldn't quite manoeuvre themselves into the position in which they could get
there. There's just no such perfect thing, is there? This is a strange analogy, but there's no such thing as a perfect time to have children. You've always got some issues, and there's probably no perfect time to make a declaration either.
Yeah. Well, they're difficult, aren't they? And what we've seen in the past is that captains, generally speaking, they bolt the game down, don't they? They get a huge lead and say you can't win, and then they think we're going to crush you in that final innings. And often, if you have totally dominated a side, I mean, especially in England, where the point is in England there's enough in the pitch, isn't there, on the final day, often to win the game, and it doesn't matter that you've got 500 runs in the bank, you sort of demoralise the opposition and you bowl them out. And it isn't often teams block out and draw these days. We could talk about this for a long time and debate. And I agree that the sceptics, if you like, it's understandable, but then it will probably take a bit of time to sort of see the way that England are playing. Yeah, we are prepared to lose to win the game, and that's exactly what they said that before the game, and that's exactly what they're doing in this match. To me, it just seems odd, though. Do you know? Here's a fact, Yoz. If England lose tomorrow, if they do, it will be the first time in the history of cricket, first class and test cricket, that a side has scored as many as 657 and lost the game. So in all first class cricket anywhere in the world in the history of the game. And that would be something quite remarkable, wouldn't it, to do that? So it just feels odd. It feels odd in a way that the opposition are still in the game when you've dominated in that way. I mean, England was superb today. They really were. I mean, but did they need a few more runs? Well, we'll find out tomorrow. It'd be perverse if Pakistan knocked them off with about three quarters of an hour left or an hour left. I don't know, 8 down or something like that. And then
if they do, I congratulations to them. Tremendous performance. They lost the toss on a perfect pitch. Mm. They managed in the first innings, their first innings, to score nearly 600 themselves, which is a tremendous effort. And if they win the game, then they totally deserve all the spoils of victory.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Going back to England one more time, just to say, I mean, Harry Brook, I mean, he sort of exceeded himself today, didn't he? Yeah. Even 150 in his second Test match first innings, and almost bettered that today with his 80-odd, 87 in, what, 60 balls, was threatening the fastest ever 100 by an England batsman. He's already got the third fastest in the first innings. He was almost going to beat his own record before just getting taking one too many liberties. But his quality of stroke, his certainty of stroke, and the range of stroke is just amazing to watch.
Yeah, fabulous. High-class innings. He's done a brilliant Test match. And from the outside, I think there were a few people who thought, you know, for England to manoeuvre their sort of team into the correct position so they've got the balance right and enough options, that Brook might miss out in this game. You know, if they were going to play Livingston as a spinning all-rounder, and they weren't going to play Will Jacks to start with, because folks had to drop out. You know, they might have needed someone like the pace of Overton to just unsettle it a bit. That extra pace on a slow pitch can, you know, through the air can sometimes unsettle, especially the lower order. Then Brook might be the one to drop out. But actually, I mean, I wasn't in favour of that, because I thought this guy is a real talent and he needs to be in the England team. The problem actually is going to come, Yoz, when Johnny Bairstow's fit. How are they going to fit everyone into their side, you know, in that batting order? When, if you think, you know, you've got two openers, you've got Pope, who's nailed in at number three, Root, who's nailed in at number four, Bairstow, who's nailed in at number five, and Stokes is the captain. Where does Brook fit into the team? Does he go to the top of the order? Does he open the batting? With
nice Dan problem Crawley? To have. Lovely problem to have. I guess one option might be to have Johnny Bairstow keeping wicket. Those big fans of Ben Folkes will decry that idea. That's a way of getting Bairstow into the side as well, without, you know, you losing your Harry Brook. It's tricky, isn't it? It's great to have that issue. I mean, I guess in the summer, will Ben Duckett be the ideal option to open in the Ashes? I'm not entirely convinced by him. I think he's really good option in the subcontinent. Not entirely sure he's... You know, I remember actually watching him bat for Northants before he'd moved to Notts, and he was playing an early season game at Lords, very early season game, like April the 7th or something. And I was sat with at the time, the Northants director of cricket, Nigel Felton, former Northants and Somerset player. And he said, look, we've got some really good young players here. I'm really excited to see how they go. Ben Duckett was walking out with the other Northants opener, I can't remember who. Duckett was out about third ball, trying to work a ball from off stump through mid-wicket, caught a cover off a leading edge. And soon after that, Northants were 44 for 9. The director of cricket was covering his head in his hands. I don't think Duckett is the man for seaming pitches. It may be that England have to have a different sort of option for home tests in opening pairs, but away tests like this one, he's obviously a good choice.
Yeah, well, the relishing Pakistan pitches, he's had a good time out here. I mean, out for naught today, but I mean, that was an aggressive shot as well. I mean, he could have left it. He sort of went for a cut shot, and he just feathered it a bit too much, and was taken at first slip. Taken a second slip out first ball for naught. So one of a few select band who scored 100 in a Test match and then been out first ball in the second innings. I suppose you'd take that, wouldn't you? If you look back at a Test match, rather than scoring 250s, you'd love 100, and he's got his breakthrough 100. And yeah, good, fair play to him. He'll play in the second and third Test as long as he stays fit and well. And Joe Root today looked absolutely nailed on for 100. And you know, we cannot leave the subject of Joe Root without talking about the fact that he's set up left-handed. You know, he plays all those reverse sweeps, but for a while, you know, for a moment, he actually batted left-handed. He went for a sweep and was dropped at mid-wicket. Really difficult chance. I'm sure we'll see it again. But you know, this is a reinvented route as well. He played that scoop shot that we saw in the summer. You know, where you put the bat there and it goes over your head, and that came off as well. Before, what about Joe Root batting left-handed then?
Well, I think it's totally sensible. I suppose the only thing is, it then does bring into the question of the ball pitching outside leg stump, because he was facing a leg spinner bowling round the wicket whose main aim was landing the ball into the rough outside leg stump, which obviously means you can't get an LBW decision. But if Root then stands as a left-hander, like his brother, of course, is, Billy, yeah. If he stands as a left-hander, then doesn't that mean the ball pitching outside the leg stump is now outside the off stump? And it Absolutely. Could be an LBW if he's hit in line playing a shot, it could be given out from that line. Whereas if he was facing it as a right-hander, he couldn't be given out from that line under any circumstances. So I think the umpires have to kind of think on their feet here whether, well, and I'm pretty sure actually that if you take guard as the left-hander, as he did in that case, he becomes a left-hander in the umpire's
totally,
mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But I think it makes a lot of sense if you are prepared to take the risk of the LBW possibility. It makes a lot of sense because even though these guys are brilliant at their reverse sweeps and switch hits and so on, there is a lot of movement associated with playing those shots. And to actually be in the position you want to be in at the start of the delivery must be a help. I guess the only downside is that the bowler now knows what the batsman is going to do, whereas you can be slightly put off as a bowler running up the bowl and you're halfway through your action and the batsman swivels round or does something strange at the crease, and that is off-putting to the bowler. Whereas at least now with the bowler seeing Root standing as a left-hander, he knows what to expect. Unless, of course, Root starts as a left-hander and then swivels and plays a right-handed sweep. That would be an interesting one.
Well, that will probably happen sometime as well. I mean, the way they're sort of just rethinking the game and doing lots of different things. And yeah, it's great fun to watch. It's fascinating to watch it. One other thing is which struck me today as well, the fact that, of course, England score their runs so quickly means that if they were in the field for about 150 plus overs, they were only batting for whatever it was, you know, relatively short space of time, and they're out there again, and they're going to be in the field all day tomorrow. It's quite knackering, actually, when you score so quickly and get out so quickly. It puts a bit of strain on the bowlers, doesn't it? And the fields. And Ollie Pope, who's got to keep wicket again. He was back out there keeping wicket after a long time in the dirt. I suppose the one thing here is the days tend to be a bit shorter. So although you're in the field for quite a lot of overs, you're not playing these 90 over days. You know, there's going to be a little bit of respite because the playing hours are restricted because of the lack of light at this time of year. But it does this method does put some strain on the bowlers.
Now I'm going to ask a question. I don't know whether you can see this from the higher levels of the commentary box. How far away are you from the Himalayas?
Well, we certainly can't see them, but I don't think we're that far. I've looked on a map; they're sort of, you know, they're somewhere out there, in the haze.
In the haze. I'm asking you that because the last time I was in Islamabad, I did actually visit the Himalayas by plane. We took off on the day after the match from Islamabad Airport, which won't be that far from where you are, and within half an hour, we were over the Himalayas, and this was a special pleasure flight in a very large plane, a 737, but specifically to give us a tour of the Himalayas. And so we flew up the what's known as the Swat Valley, which is this very high but beautiful valley in between the mountains, and then round K2, we flew sort of almost level with K2, the great mountain, and then round the back and past Nanga Parbat, I think, was another one. So these are 8,000 foot mountains the really high ones in the Himalayas. Everest is obviously further over towards Kathmandu, so a different section of the Himalayas. But these ones, there's about 5 or 6 8,000 foot peaks in the area just north of Islamabad, actually. If you have time, and I don't suppose you will because you've got to get to Multan, but there is a pleasure flight you can take, and it is amazing. And it's just incredible to think that, you know, within 40 minutes flying time of this test match, you can be level with an 8,000 foot mountain.
So that was a light aircraft, was it? How many seats?
It was a 737. It was a big plane, but it was earmarked for this pleasure flight, which apparently they offer. I don't know, look into it. But it was amazing, actually. I mean, we literally flew parallel. We were allowed into the cockpit, which we probably wouldn't be now, but flew literally level, eye level, with the peak of K2. It was the most magnificent day. This time of year, probably not the best, actually. But anyway, it was just lucky that we had a clear sight of everything. And it's just a wonderful sight. And you're actually close to the Chinese border there as well. Yeah. So just to give you a bit of a geographical explanation of where you are in terms of location.
Yeah, well, when we play in India, I've been to Dharamshala, which is an absolutely stunning place to play cricket.
Highest sight screens in the world at the back there, aren't they?
Yeah.
the Himalayas.
Incredible. Yeah. Wonderful ground to play cricket. If you ever get the chance to go there, listeners, take it. It's absolutely stunning. I'm a bit of a nervous flyer, actually. So I generally speaking like to have my feet on the ground. I have memories of taking off at Guatemala City Airport, which has mountains on either side. And I think from memory, mountains at the end of the valley as well that you take off from. So you've got to make sure that plane gets up and up and up and up and up over the mountains, you know, in the direction you're taking off from. So, I generally speaking like to have green fields and lots of wide open spaces around me when I take off. But we did see the snow on the mountains when we came in to Islamabad Airport a week ago.
So, it's amazing how near it is, actually. Anyway, you'll be relieved then to think that you're driving to Multan, 6-hour drive to the next test match. So are you going to be driving to Multan with an England victory in the bag or a Pakistan one?
Well, do you know, my hunch is that Pakistan have got a great chance in this game. You can see all sorts of scenarios on the last day. I think Pakistan are right in this test match. They have got a thin tail, and if England do get a couple of quick wickets in the morning, then that's going to be a big problem for Pakistan. But it's not easy to get players out on this surface. Pakistan don't have to play lots of shots. They don't, you know, they only need to sort of tick over at 3.5 runs and over, and it won't be easy for England to get these wickets if they come up against a really determined Pakistan side on the final day. So I'm not going for Pakistan, but I think they've got a decent chance. You're going for England, aren't you, Yoz?
That's annoying that you said that, because I was just going to sort of put a sort of 20 rupee note down and say, right, I'm looking forward to getting your money, but you're not prepared to put yours on the slate, are you? It sounds like. Oh well, I'm going to stick my neck out. I think England will win. I think it'll be, like you said, probably a 40 or 50 run win rather than 100. But I think they've just got the edge, and well done to them if they do. But also magnificent to Pakistan if they win as well. We think, I guess, that the draw is now out of the equation, do we?
Well, I reckon so. I mean, it's an incredible game in a way. Earlier in the match, you know, when Pakistan was 181 for no wicket at the close of the second day, I thought this game looks like a nailed-on draw. And I think the odds on the draw was 3-1 on or something like that. And yet, when England declared, I had a look at the betting market. So I was interested to see what people felt about the declaration, and Pakistan became favourites. So after an England declaration, Pakistan became favourites to win. And that, in a way, that I think that illustrated the boldness of England's declaration. So, yeah, it's been it's been a really interesting game. I mean, it's been a bizarre game, really, an unusual game, a unique game, and it could be a totally unprecedented game if Pakistan were to win this game. And you know, as Andy Zaltzman came up with, that no team in the history of of cricket, first-class cricket, has scored 657 the first innings of the match and lost. And that could happen tomorrow. But the pressure of the chase, you know, fourth innings. But, you know, we know teams are much better in the fourth innings these days than they used to be. And it is still a very good batting pitch. It's not easy to get people out. So if Pakistan, you know, even if Pakistan, well, say Pakistan did lose a few early wickets, you could see them still making it difficult for England to win the game by just digging in and showing some, you know, real grit and determination to put the big block on if it came to that. But you wouldn't think I would think draw is third favourite at the moment. Possibly tie is ahead of the draw. I don't know, but we haven't got many ties in Test cricket. That would be something, wouldn't it? A tie in this Test match. But anyway, great day in prospect. I mean, it is great for Test cricket. Excellent day in prospect. And the challenge is there for both sides.
Yeah, definitely. A fascinating day in prospect. We'll be back to talk about it this time tomorrow. And by the way, if you enjoy this podcast, please give us a review on iTunes, because that always helps to get us more followers. So thanks for listening.
Bye for now.
Podcast Network.